Downtown Productions in cooperation with Zone Radio presents Downtown the Podcast. From the historic Zone Radio studios, here's your host, Rich Kimball.
Hello, hello. Welcome. It is, just as the man said, Downtown the Podcast. I am Rich Kimball, and this is episode number 301. We're brought to you this week and every week by Renewal by Anderson, your trusted window and door replacement expert. Right now offering free in-home consultation, and you buy two windows or two doors at the regular price, get the third at 50% off. Call them. Here's the number, 207-275-6622 in Maine, or visit renewalbyanderson.com, the better way to a better window. Two talented folks join us on the podcast this week in the second half of the program. Our friend, actress Julia Duffy, multiple-time Emmy Award nominee for her work on Newhart, Stephanie Vanderkellen. She's back in a terrific new series on Apple Plus with a stellar cast called Palm Royale. And we'll talk with Julia about that in a little bit. Up first, a guy who is an Oscar short of the EGOT. He has won Emmys, Grammys, Tonys, a talented writer and composer who has written music for musicals like The Band's Visit, The Full Monty, Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. He's got a terrific new project, a project called Dead Outlaw, that is a great story and has some ties to Maine. Here's our conversation with David Yazbek on Downtown.
Hello.
Well, hello there, David. How are you?
I'm well, thank you.
Welcome to Maine. It's nice to have you here, sort of.
I love Maine. I wish I was there.
Excellent. Well, yeah, I was thinking about it, and because I'm a high school theater director, so I'm a big fan of your work, and I was thinking about the main connection with The Band's Visit with John Cariani from Maine and Tony Shalhoub, who went to school here.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, Cariani wrote that play that takes place in Maine. That's the most performed high school play in the world, I think.
Yeah, Almost Maine. Absolutely.
Almost Maine.
Well, let's talk about another Maine connection, and that's the story of Elmer McCurdy. Could you give a sort of a capsule overview of this fascinating story?
I will try. we will start in 1976, and we are in Southern California at an amusement park, and there is a dark ride, sort of a House of Horrors type ride that takes place indoors. And the $6 Million Man TV show starring Lee Majors is setting up to do a remote shoot in this House of Horrors kind of ride. And they're setting up, you know, the interior. And a Teamster notices that there's this red, painted Day-Glo red wax dummy hanging by a noose under a black light on a far wall, and he approaches it, and he's told to move it. He grabs the arm, and it comes off, and there's a bone inside.
No.
And he realizes this is not a dummy. And they spirit this mummy off to the county coroner of Los Angeles, who has this mystery to solve, and the turns out that who this mummy was when he was alive was a man named Elmer McCurdy, who was born in Searsmont, Maine, in 1880, and had a career as an outlaw. He did other things, too, but he would always end up recidivizing back into crime, and he was not a very competent criminal. He learned how to use nitroglycerin in the Army, but he never used to learn. He never learned how to blow up a safe with it. So a couple of times he tried to blow up bank safes. One time he used too much nitro. The safe opened, but all the $3,000 worth of silver coins inside ended up fused to the melted and fused to the floor and the walls of the safe. Another time he used nitro. It did not open the safe, but it blew the safe through the bank wall into the street. And he had to flee with his band of incompetent criminals. And then finally, he tried to rob a train, which was a very glamorous crime. at the time. This was in, now he's in Pawhuska County, Oklahoma. He was constantly traveling. Now he's in Oklahoma. They go to rob the Osage Indian train, the train that carries the money that came to the tribe from their mineral rights, $300,000. But also it's just a very glamorous crime. It just harkens back to the old West. It was 1911 or something like that. So it's sort of like going back to the romantic, quote unquote, romantic days of Billy the Kid. He robs the train. It's the wrong train. Comes away with a pocket watch, a couple of bottles of rum, and like $30. So even though it was such a lousy take, it still was an armed robbery, and a posse is formed. Posse hunts him down and kills him. And his body is brought to the Pawhuska County coroner, who pumps it filled with arsenic, because that's what they used at the time for embalming. And it's a very good preservative. No one claims the body. The body is in the Pawhuska County's coroner's office for 5 years, slowly desiccating in the dry air, turning into a mummy. But in the meantime, he is this guy who always wanted to be famous, like a famous outlaw. He is famous for a very short period of time after his death, and people come to see the body. Of course, he can't enjoy the fame because he's dead. The coroner props him up with a gun in his hand and basically charges to get glimpses at him. And until two guys appear, they claim to be his brothers. They turn out actually to be the owners of a sideshow, the Patterson Brothers sideshow. And now they start exhibiting him as the outlaw who would not give up. So any good sideshow should have a human mummy in it back then. And that sideshow traveled all over the country. And then he ends up being sold and traded and bought and borrowed. So by the time he's gone through the entire, almost the entire century up till 1976, he's been in several sideshows. He's been in a wax museum. He's been in an exhibit called Outlaws and Presidents, where he is exhibited as a cautionary tale. That's what happens if you're an outlaw. He's in several exploitation films in the same manner. And he had a great career in show business after his death.
So
that's the story.
So when you heard this story, what said to you, that's a musical?
Well, when I heard this story 30 years ago, nothing said that to me. What it said to me was, that is the wildest thing I've ever heard. And it's funny and sad and crazy. And then I researched it and I looked into it. And then there was a couple of books I read, and there was a documentary that wasn't that great on BBC, but it was still interesting. And I realized, why am I obsessed by this story? And because it's not just a great story. And what I came up with was, well, there's a depth to it involving just examining your own life and examining what you want out of life and what you think will happen when you die, other than just, you know, like, why are you going for some weird kind of fame or immortality? And why are you chasing money? And, you know, it's kind of like, it's almost a cautionary tale about being in the present as opposed to living for some weird future, you know, of riches or wealth. And it just becomes this very sort of almost Buddhist contemplation. It's a memento mori. It helps you think about your life and think about the present moment. And also, a mummy is like a empty slate. It's like a tabula rasa, and people come, whether it's to the Metropolitan Museum to see Egyptian mummies, or whether it's, you know, a sideshow, or why is it magnetically fascinating to look at this? And those are the questions that feel music like music to me. That's a long answer.
We're talking with David Yazbek here on Downtown. I always felt like, am I wrong about this, that all your time in bands influenced your work on musicals, because your music, not that other musicals don't have this, but yours is always, it's so interesting, and I would think would be fun for musicians to play, not the kind of music you would get tired of playing 8 times a week.
Oh, well, that's a great question. That's really interesting to me, because my very first show is the Full Monty, and I wrote an overture to that show that, as well as exit music to that show, that has lots and lots of space for musicians to improvise. And I did that because I knew some of the musicians in the band. they were in my band, and I was like, wow, I don't, you know, let them have a little fun here and there. So there's so room for solos, and I think my stuff is very often groove oriented, and that's really fun to play. And yeah, you're right, because I'm a musician and a player, sometimes on purpose and sometimes accidentally, the stuff I write comes out that way. And I hear this from musicians all over the world who play my stuff. I go to a show, I'm actually going to go see Tootsie in Japan tomorrow. I'm leaving tomorrow. But I've heard from musicians in several different languages. I just wanted to say hi, because it's so much fun to play this. If you're in a pit all the time playing the same thing over and over, you know, you can actually watch television while you're playing your part on some shows. And I didn't want my shows to be that way.
Well, the opening song from Dead Outlaw, Dead, is a great example of that. It's just, it is frankly, a kick-ass number that takes you right to that moment in the story.
Thank you. That's a great example of a song that my co-writer, Eric Della Penna, and I, you know, I played him that riff on a guitar in front of him, and then he had a guitar, and then we just start playing. You know, like, the excitement of us writing that song is still part of the song, I think.
So I have to bring this up, because when we learned you were going to be on the show, I flash back to many, many years ago when somebody gave me a mixtape, a dear friend, and on the mixtape were two songs that I still listen to regularly, and I love the whole album, Evil Monkey Man, but particularly Never Get Out of This and Industrial Love Song.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, Industrial Love Song, wow. those lyrics were written by a friend of mine, Howard Corder, who is a playwright who also was the executive producer and main writer on Boardwalk Empire.
Right, right.
Entire run. I actually scored the last season of Boardwalk Empire as a composer. And I don't think I've ever written a song like that before. So I so appreciate that. What was the other one?
Never Get Out of This.
Oh, thanks. Well, I'm very proud of that song for the lyrics of it, because I like the turns of phrase and the little sort of puns inside, but it's also very much a Dead Outlaw type song, because it's saying, what are you trying to escape? You know, you can try everything you can to escape the fact that you live, which means that someday you'll die. So why keep trying to escape it when you should just live it? So thank you. I'm proud of that song.
So Dead Outlaw is playing at the Minetta Theater, and then you're going to Audible, and that's such a cool concept. I love the work they've done. They've produced some terrific works so far. As a creator, is that limiting, or does it allow you to be more creative because you're in such a unique structure, just creating sound?
It's actually incredibly exciting. We just finished 2 weeks of recording. It was almost like recording a cast album and then also recording all the scenes from the show. the show right now at the Minetta Lane is pretty much exactly what my collaborators and I were dreaming of. So we're very, very happy with it in every way. The visuals, elements, the lighting, the sets are great. And I hope that show has a long life elsewhere, because we have to leave the Minetta Lane was booked, you know, for other Audible stuff. But I'm sure we will move it to off-Broadway, commercial, or Broadway. But the real sort of like living forever part of it is this Audible product, the radio show. Mm. And that'll be available in October. We're going to do it like a great World of Sound radio show. And for me, everything comes in through the ears, and it's going to be just this great version of a musical. I've never heard anything like that before. I've never been able to listen to a complete musical done almost cinematically, but only audio. So I'm excited.
I am too. I can't wait to hear it. Dead Outlaw, David Yazbek, such a fan of your work. Great to talk with you today. We wish you much luck with this show and continued success. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you very much.
David Yazbek talking about his new production, Dead Outlaw. We'll take a break for this word from Renewal by Anderson. When we come back, Julia Duffy returns to Downtown.
The better way to a better window, Renewal by Anderson.
Get ready to welcome the freshness of spring into your home with Renewal by Anderson, where your window and door dreams come to life.
This is owner Troy Pearl, here to tell you that from your free in-home consultation to your window and door installation, we ensure a seamless home improvement process that will leave you with satisfaction and a warranty. But that's not all. Our exclusive FiberX material, high-performance glass, and custom designs set Renewal by Anderson apart. Experience the durability of FiberX, the clarity of high-performance glass, and the freedom to design a home that reflects your unique style. And here's an offer that blooms just in time for spring. Buy two windows or doors and get the third at an incredible 50% off.
To schedule your free in-home consultation, visit rbagreatermaine.com. That's rbagreatermaine.com.
The better way to a better window, Renewal by Anderson.
Back on Downtown, our next guest starred for several seasons as Stephanie Vanderkellen on the award-winning sitcom Newhart. She is in a brand new series with a stellar cast that includes Kristen Wiig, Laura Dern, Allison Janney, and the legendary Carol Burnett. We're talking about Palm Royale, airing on Apple Plus. We talked about that and more with our friend Julia Duffy.
Hello, Rich.
Hello, Julia. How are you?
I'm good.
I'm so glad to hear that. How's the weather out your way?
Well, it's a little cooler and windier than we would like, but it's probably a lot better than it is where you are.
Yeah, we were having spring. It was warm and sunny and nice, and then we got hit with a big sort of combination snow and ice storm over the weekend. So it's we've taken a step
I'm
back.
I'm seeing a lot of pictures on Instagram of, you know, and this is spring.
Mm.
A lot of heavy snow in places.
Well, we'll adjust. It'll be over soon. It's going to rain this week. Wash it all away, and we'll be back on track. Well,
it's March. It can't last.
Exactly. Oh, my goodness. I love Palm Royale so much. What an absolute delight of a show.
Well, I'm very glad to hear that.
I finished the third episode over the weekend, and now I'm hanging. Tell me there will be more episodes soon. Is it going to be a weekly release?
Yes, it'll be every Wednesday for the next 7 Wednesdays. I think May 7th or something like that is the last one, which is really, really something. It ends on a cliffhanger that you can guess all you want, but you won't guess this.
Well, the first episode ended with a bang. Well, no, that's... did I do that? I can't believe I said that. It leaves me wondering what's coming next. So I think we talked with you about this a little over a year ago. How long ago did you shoot the series?
So long ago. This is what happens when you have a year of strikes.
Mm.
So I think originally it should have begun to air last September, but we finished it a year ago, November.
Wow.
A year and a half. I mean, almost a year and a half, because it was November of 22nd when we finished. So it's a very strange feeling to have all this time go by.
And yet it seems like perfect timing for this show. It's fun. It's a drama. It's a comedy. It's a satire. There are a lot of things going on in this show.
It has a lot of different tones, which I think really add up to something. It gets wackier as you go along. I mean, some unbelievable things happen. And my character particularly changes a great deal from how you see her now and what happens later. I do a lot more later on.
Well, let's talk about Mary Jones David Soul. Love the name. She is a recent widow devoted to her charities and to being part of society. But how did you connect with this character?
Well, first of all, just from the point of view of the period, I was raised by these women. I didn't grow up in that economic level, but this is 1969, and I was there. Not very many in the cast were there in 1969, but I will admit. And I was raised by a single mom, and so between her and her friends and my aunts, I just knew the women of that period. But also from a comedic standpoint, to play somebody who's been a certain way all her life, and probably gone to charm school and all of the things that a woman of that era would have done when she was young. And to have somebody who's that stuck in that version of womanhood, to me, was hilarious.
What's interesting, you mentioned that, because I was around in 1969, also raised by a single mom. And I think the show illustrates that There were things going on with women depending on where they were in society and where they were in their life. And some of the women of the club are very happy with the way things have always been and want them to stay that way. And then there are those like Laura Dern's character pushing for change and a new attitude.
Well, it is a time of change. Absolutely. There's a reason that it's set in 1969, such a pivotal time. And I remember it so well because these women were very strong in my life. And I remember my mother and my aunt having a discussion about feminism, and they just didn't get it. They've been ruling their own kingdom for some time and doing it all, I would say. And I thought that was so interesting because they already felt liberated because they were such strong women who were taking care of so much. But I guess they weren't as dependent on men. My mother worked all her life, and she was an executive because she had to. But she was in a man's world, and she aced it, you know? So it's fascinating to me to play somebody who has been such a female, and, of course, dependent on men, and then to have her go through quite a change. To have that era affect her the way that it does, which you will see coming up.
Well, I thought at first, my goodness, Mary is so sweet. She doesn't really belong with these other kind of cutthroat women. And then episode 3, when you all meet at the Delacorte Mansion and the knives come out, I go, oh, my goodness, there's another side of Mrs. David Soul here.
Well, especially because this usurper is enormous house. And that to us is sacred. Norma is like a god to us. And that she could do that when we've been spending our lives trying to have power there and to please Norma, who holds all the secrets. And your entire social life, which is your entire social life, is ruled by how much Norma promoted you or accepted you. And then here she is in Norma's house. And it was galling, I think, to all of us, and sort of humiliating to be going over to Norma's house, and this person we don't know is hosting a cocktail party. And there's a line about all of the things that Norma would have done if she were hosting a cocktail party. And of course, Kristen's character has no idea that that's what you're supposed to do. So it's interesting to see their power being taken away by somebody who has no power but wants it. I mean, when you really, really think about it, it's a fascinating premise.
Oh, very much so. We're talking with Julia Duffy about the new series on Apple Plus called Palm Royale. What an incredible ensemble with yourself, Allison Janney, Kristen Wiig, Laura Dern, the legendary Carol Burnett. It had to be fun to work with all of these talented women.
Oh, my God, it was. It was every day so much fun. And there was a moment when Abe, our showrunner, creator of the show, came over to me and he said, "I've never seen women support each other like this." I said, "Really? That's what we do. I see them all the time." But he was absolutely thrilled with, I guess, how we were on the set and how we interacted. And we were so supportive of Kristen, who, oh my God, she was in like every scene, and I couldn't even imagine how she did it. That was a big, heavy role.
But you're all such pros, too, that while much of the series is big and larger than life, given the setting and the time period, and yet so much of the acting is beautifully subtle and is done with just a look, a glance, the raise of an eyebrow.
Well, it's almost as though in different storylines or different scenes, we were trying to bring a certain feeling. You know, we would reference things like Valley of the Dolls, Peyton Place. It'd be a spoiler if I tell you what we were referencing in some of my upcoming scenes. But we were very aware of those different tones. And, of course, Abe was brilliant at writing them. And then, of course, also much of the time directing. He directed a lot of episodes. And that was just so much fun to know what we were going for tone-wise.
And I've seen him in a couple of things before, but my goodness, Ricky Martin is a revelation. He is so wonderful in this.
Isn't he? He was a revelation. I mean, he's just very genuine and sincere in person, and he really brought that in. And I just thought he was completely adorable. And I don't know, he just has a lot. He has this gravitas you weren't expecting character.
One of the things that brings 1969 to life, the incredible set, and of course the costumes, the clothing is so fabulous. Who is responsible for creating that wonderful look that takes us immediately to that time?
Well, Alex Freberg did the costumes, and it doesn't get any better than that. And John Carlos was the designer. We shot in some beautiful homes, but most of the jaw-dropping sets were on the lot that they were designed. And every time we walked into a new set, we would all just be gasping. We were so blown away by them the first time we saw them. I mean, you kind of wanted to sit there forever and never leave those sets. Every detail is, I hope all the details are on camera or on screen, because I couldn't stop looking at them. They were so fascinating. Truly, I've never been on such a beautiful production.
And of course, while the story takes place in 1969, there are echoes to the present day. I think of the episode when Laura Dern is talking about women's rights, and her character explains that, look, if we take care of this now, 30, 40 years from now, women won't have to worry about this anymore. Oh, my.
Yeah, I know. It's the perspective of that time is really interesting. And it's also really interesting to me that she is this very intelligent, very intense feminist who kind of turns to mush when she meets Ricky. So you can say all the things you want, but I just thought it was very interesting. I don't know what viewers will take from it, but that fascinated me to have that character have both sides. I just loved how she did it.
So you said that every Wednesday we'll get, is it one new episode a week from now on?
Yes.
Oh.
Because there are really, really amazing things coming up. And if people aren't binging at different times and are waiting for Wednesday, it's better because you could really ruin the experience with spoilers.
Well, I like it so much better that way. I mean, it's nice to be able to binge once a series has aired completely, and if you want to go back and rewatch or if you missed it. But I love the anticipation that, well, I grew up with of having to wait until that new episode comes out and wondering what will happen. And then, especially with this show, taking a little time to process what I just watched.
Yeah, and you just won't even believe what's coming up. I wish I could say anything about it, but there are things that are shocking and comedically shocking that are done. And, you know, you just imagine people texting each other and calling each other and saying, oh, my God, when they're all watching it at the same time. Although, of course, when they drop, they tend to drop on that date after midnight. So people won't be watching it at the same time. But at least it's all on the same date.
Well, it has been a wonderful ride through the first three episodes. And it's so great to see you in a series doing the remarkable work that you have always done as a part of this great cast. I'm loving Palm Royale, and I'm so happy for you and for all of us to get to see you doing what you do so very well.
Well, thank you. And I think we really have to give most of the credit to our writer, who, by the way, isn't very old. How did you know about this era and these women? I don't get how would you know and relate to them? He said, it's just mom and that generation. He really gets it.
I love it. It's great. Palm Royale on Apple Plus. You can get caught up right now before Wednesday's brand new episode drops. You will love it. Julia, it's wonderful to talk with you again. Thank you so much for being with us.
You too, Rich, as always. I hope your snow melts.
I will do my best. Well, you're giving me warm thoughts thinking about you in the future episodes. That might do the trick right there.
It might.
Right. Thanks again, Julia.
Thank you, Rich. Bye-bye.
It's the wonderful Julia Duffy with us. Check it out on Apple Plus Palm Royale. It is so much fun. Our thanks to Julia, of course. Always great to talk with her. And a thanks to the talented David Yazbek for being with us as well. And to you for checking in with Downtown, which is produced by Carrie Haskell from his spacious New Orleans studio and brought to you every week by Renewal by Anderson, the better way to a better window. This is Rich Kimball. See you next time right here on Downtown.